This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. What do you do with the mad that you feel? When you feel so mad you could bite? When the whole wide world seems oh so wrong, and nothing you do seems very right? What do you do? Do you punch a bag? Do you pound some clay or some dough? Do you round up friends for a game of tag and see how fast you go? It's great to be able to stop when you've planned a thing that's wrong, and be able to do something else instead, and think this song. I can stop when I want to, can stop when I wish, can stop anytime. And what a good feeling to feel like this, and know that the feeling is really mine. Fred Rogers wrote these lyrics for one of his many songs in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He quoted it to a congressional committee when appealing for funding of children's television. And Tom Hanks sings it in the new film, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. The lessons of Mr. Rogers may seem childish, but this movie reminds us that facing your feelings ain't kid stuff. Joining us in studio is Ronald Young Jr., an associate minister and junior pastor at Greater Refuge Temple here in Washington. He's also a cultural commentator and host of the podcasts Time Well Spent and Leaving the Theater. Ronald, welcome back to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us from KPCC in Pasadena is the vice president of the 1A Movie Club, John Horn, the host of the daily arts and entertainment program, The Frame. Mr. Vice President, welcome back.
Happy to be with you.
And at NPR West is Beyondria July, a freelance culture writer and film critic. Beyondria, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's get your review, starting with you, John. How many stars out of five and why?
I'm going to give this movie 4 stars. I went in not knowing much about this. I know what the source material was. I was really moved by the story itself. But I think what is most interesting about this film is kind of the rabbit hole it has led me down in terms of re-examining Fred Rogers' life, looking at Tom Juno, the journalist whose story this film is adapted from. I've spent all morning reading about Fred Rogers, and it has made me both really excited and really sad.
Beyondria July, what about you? How many stars out of five and why?
I would give it 4 stars as well. I too was really moved by the film, and it's just nice to see an earnest film that takes something as touchy-feely as feeling your feelings very seriously, and, you know, also gives us hope in heroes again, as so many fallen heroes have come before us in recent years. It's nice to know Mr. Rogers is who he said he was.
And Ronald, what about you?
I will also give it 4 or 5 stars. I walked into this movie a cynic, a huge Tom Hanks fan, but a Fred Rogers cynic. And I walked in and I was surprised by the emotion that I had and the emotional depth this movie has, and so aware of my feelings walking out of the movie. So definitely 4 or 5 stars.
John, for those people who have not seen the movie, may not be on the fence, may not be sold on going to see it, can you just summarize for us what A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is about?
It is a very loose adaptation of an article that Tom Junod wrote for Esquire magazine back in 1998. Tom Junod had a reputation as being a kind of harsh, scorched earth kind of journalist. He's assigned this piece, and he ends up becoming far less cynical about himself and about Fred Rogers through the process. That's essentially the magazine story. The film invents a lot of things about the journalist's life. His name is changed to Lloyd Vogel in the film. He is struggling with his father. He is struggling with his own emotions. That is not really part of the magazine article, but it's the core of the story. And it's really about their friendship and how Fred Rogers teaches this journalist to look inside himself. And Fred Rogers is an example of how you can think about others and how you can be kind and how you can be forgiving. And the journalist, through his time spent with Fred Rogers, I think learns to be a better person.
There was also, John, kind of in the background of this story, the cultural hype around Fred Rogers. You know, you see scenes of him on the Arsenio Hall show. He gets stopped on the street. So this was also kind of at a time when Fred Rogers was really kind of a Mandarin. He was this shining star in American culture that people could actually see and touch.
And he was very unhappy with that. I mean, he did not like the idea of celebrity, but he did like the idea of using television as a pulpit. He was a Presbyterian minister, and he felt that his ministry could be through television. He hated television. He didn't watch television, but Fred Rogers thought that he could use his show as a way to change the world as a priest would in a church.
Biandria, did you grow up with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
I did. I can't say I was like a, you know, super big devotee, but, you know, coming of age in the 90s, he was just always around and in the ether. And this movie actually helped me to kind of let my inner child rediscover Mr. Rogers anew.
Anything in particular you rediscovered?
Well, so much. I mean, I think there's very few movies that, you know, really detail what like a quote unquote spiritual journey is like in a secular way. And I think that a lot of adults, myself included, really don't know what to do with our feelings, you know, because we are grown-ups, we're expected to act a certain way, but yeah, our emotions are very real. And I thought this movie really addressed, you know, ways that you can deal with that. And also just how I thought it was really interesting how, the main character, Lloyd, you know, at the time that he's become a new father is also when his issues with his father come up. And I think that's also a very common pattern, you know, that your early childhood stuff kind of follows you all your life until you deal with it.
Ronald, what about you? Your recollections of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood growing up? I know you said you came into the movie a cynic, so maybe your perspective kind of shifted over time? Or were you always kind of cynical about it?
So as a child, I was a Sesame Street kid. When Mr. Rogers would come on, I would tend to watch it for a couple minutes and be like, this is boring, change the channel. Mm-hmm. As an adult, I didn't recognize his impact. I didn't recognize his impact until I watched this movie, and then I watched his documentary, and I realized that what he's doing was, it was so important to the children that he reached at the time, but the lessons that he taught those children weren't meant to just stay in your childhood. They were meant to grow up with you. So watching those, there was stuff that was sitting there. I was like, these are lessons that I can definitely apply right now. I'm sitting there watching the movie, and when he's talking about what to do with your anger, I was like, I have anger. Now I know what to do with it, you know? And I felt like that's something that's applicable to adults as well as children.
You can stop when you want to.
Exactly.
You can stop when you wish.
Exactly.
Let's dive in on the phones. Dina is on the line. Hey, Dina, what did you think of the movie?
Growing up with Mr. Rogers, I thought that the message and the sentiment of the film was great. With a lot of feel-good movies, it tends to glamorize the issue. Nonetheless, I grew up with Mr. Rogers. I've seen the documentary, and I think that the film enhanced the lessons that can be learned for adults and children.
Elaborate on that a little bit, Dina. When you say enhanced the lessons, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that the movie really touched upon the fact that kids got a lot out of it, didn't necessarily want to admit that they got a lot out of it, but it really has a profound effect on children, both from the past and today. Additionally, the thing that I took from the movie was that we divorced, 15 years ago. My sons were 2 and 5, and I wish that I had shared Mr. Rogers' program with them because it was a difficult time, and there weren't a lot of support services for young children of divorced parents. So I really liked the way Fred Rogers addressed the difficult issues, more than being patient, dealing with death, dealing with divorce, dealing with bullying at school.
Yeah, Dina, I appreciate you sharing that. Thanks very much for sharing your review with us. By the way, for those of you who haven't seen the documentary, it was called Won't She Be My Neighbor? It came out last year. We did an hour on this documentary and about the nature of children's television today, particularly about the programs that carry on the legacy of Mr. Rogers. You'll find that conversation at the1a.org. Francis wrote in our inbox, do we need the lessons he taught? Yes. Yes, 1,000 times yes. But kindness will not stop dictators intent on enslaving others. We need to realize that we are in a fight and we must win before we can allow the space for the brilliance of Fred Rogers. I'm interested in Francis's thought. Where do we make room for the lessons of Fred Rogers? Is it something we can embrace now, or do we have to work through some other stuff first? We'll deal with that and more of your reviews in just a minute. I'm Joshua Johnson, glad to be with you, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Uber. Uber is committed to safety and to continuously raising the bar to help make safer journeys for everyone. For starters, all drivers are background checked before their first ride and screened on an ongoing basis. And now Uber has introduced a brand new safety feature called Ride Check, which can detect if a trip goes unusually off course and check in to provide support. To learn more about Uber's commitment to safety, visit uber.com/safety.
I know we'd all love the holidays to be this happy, stress-free, joyful time, but let's be real, that is not always the case. NPR's Life Kit is answering your holiday questions and helping you navigate family dynamics all season long. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Listen and subscribe to Life Kit All Guides.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. The 1A Movie Club is reviewing A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood with Ronald Young Jr., an associate minister and junior pastor at Greater Refuge Temple here in D.C., John Horn, the host of The Frame on KPCC Public Radio, and Beyondria July, a film and culture critic. Randy emailed, "I think people long for and are drawn to innocence and honesty and love in this world of cynicism and conspiracy. Everyone has a dark past, and I think we all want to be like Fred. Those things I learned when I was 5, I consciously try to apply every day in my life. Fred was the same when no one was watching, that purity and kindness is a powerful thing." That kind of gets us back to Francis's comment, and Francis wrote, "Do we need the lessons he taught? Yes. Yes, 1,000 times yes. But kindness will not stop dictators intent on enslaving others. We need to realize that we are in a fight, and we must win before we can allow the space for the brilliance of Fred Rogers."
So truly, I don't think we understand how transformative kindness and compassion can be. When we talk about being in a fight, we're talking about after the fact. We're talking about after we haven't dealt with our feelings, after we haven't treated everyone with love, kindness, and respect. And we're talking about dealing with the results of that. And what Mr. Rogers is trying to say is up front, we should be kind and compassionate to one another. And as a result, we can live in a world that is safer for each other, where we treat each other with respect. Because kindness and compassion begats more kindness and compassion. Now, one thing you did say, you mentioned people looking at him as a messianic figure. And it's funny because him being a deeply spiritual person, he actually practiced the purest form of Christianity, which was to uphold two of the highest commandments that we talk about when we talk about Jesus, which was love God and love your neighbors as yourself.
The Great Commission.
Exactly. So I think when we talk about what we want to do to make this world a better place, we want to love our neighbors. We want to treat them better. And that will overthrow dictatorships. That will go further than just trying to use anger as a tool to just tear people down.
Beyondria, I'd love your reaction to that as well. But let me read one more comment to add to that. CJ writes, "There's something so resonant about Fred Rogers' innocence, devotion, and earnestness. His demeanor and personality was so Christ-like. Rare to see someone so famous and legendary be that positive a figure for everyone." Beyondria?
Yeah, I mean, I think just speaking in my own personal tradition, which is mainly Buddhist but kind of eclectic, you know, there's this idea that like the world doesn't need another messed up, you know, dysfunctional person trying to save it. And I think it's not an either or question of being kind or fighting. You know, it's all, both things can happen at the same time. They're not contradictory to one another. And I think the more that people, you know, have an awareness, have some self-awareness, some basic idea about how they work, what their issues are, the more effective they'll be in the fight.
Let's keep going on the line. In Ligonier, Pennsylvania, Emily is on the line. Hey, Emily, what did you think of the movie?
Hi there. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I grew up in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, where Fred Rogers was originally from. I also lived in Pittsburgh for a time.
Oh.
And his legacy is everywhere, especially in Latrobe. He is really invested in early childhood education and libraries and parks. And he continues to do what he set out to do when he was living in caring for children. And it is just really incredible to see his messaging everywhere still.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think a lot of people, Emily, who saw Fred Rogers wondered is like, is he for real? And you know, folks like you, I hear say, yeah, that was really him.
Absolutely. He was the real deal. And my children still watch Daniel Tiger. And so that the messaging continues that way. And he truly was beyond his time.
Right. Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, the animated show that is made by the same company that made Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Now, what about La Trobe? Is La Trobe a friendlier, nicer place because Fred Rogers was there? If I went to La Trobe, would I find a number of, like, Fred Rogers devotees who were, like, super nice and super friendly?
Oh, I absolutely. We still have a Fred Rogers Day. There are the trolley symbols are on the street signs. We have Welcome to the Neighborhood. I think that people here really see him as a saint-like figure for sure.
What did you take the most from the legacy of Fred Rogers?
Absolutely the kindness, but also the inclusion. I can vividly remember as I was growing up and watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood that there was a particular episode where there was a little boy who was disabled and in a wheelchair. And just the kindness and the love that he showed for him, and that is something that I for sure think we need more of.
Yeah, I definitely hear that, Emily. Thank you very much for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us. With regards to kindness and inclusion, here's a quick clip from Francois Clemens, who played Officer Clemens on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He shared his story with StoryCorps about his experiences being part of the neighborhood.
There was one particular scene that Fred and I did where he had his feet resting in this plastic pool on a hot day.
Oh, there's Officer Clemens. Hi, Officer Clemens. Come in.
Mr. Rogers, how are you?
And he invited me to come over and to rest my feet in the water with him.
Would you like to join me?
Okay,
sure.
The icon Fred Rogers not only was showing my brown skin in the tub with his white skin as two friends, but as I was getting out of that tub, he was helping me dry my feet.
There, that one's dry.
That was Francois Clemens, who played Officer Clemens in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, sharing his story with StoryCorps. Back to the phones now in East Point, Georgia. Beatrice is on the line. Hey, Beatrice, what did you think of the movie?
I saw it. My husband and I saw it. It was wonderful. The lessons about anger, but mostly kindness, compassion, things that we seem to have completely forgotten today in this painfully difficult political time, just went away. My heart was just cleansed. It was wonderful. And my children grew up looking at Mr. Rogers, and my son one day was watching, and I went out the room. And when I came back, he had turned the contrast on the TV. I said, Nate, what are you doing, baby? He said, I'm making Mr. Rogers black like me. I said, oh, my goodness.
Oh.
But there was so much that children can learn from that. But, of course, it has to be acted on by parents and people in their environments. But it's just a starting point, a jumping-off point. I thought Mr. Rogers was wonderful, and the movie was just perfect. I thought the actors, the persons chosen to act the parts did a good job, and it was just a great experience.
Wow, that is very cute, turning down the contrast on the TV so Mr. Rogers looks a little more brown.
Yeah.
Very, very sweet. Beatrice, thank you for calling and sharing your story with us. Let's talk about Tom Hanks. He described playing Mr. Rogers as terrifying in an interview with Gail King from CBS This Morning, and he pushed back at the idea of this being an easy role for him because he's, you know, Tom Hanks.
There's no such thing as an easy role to do.
Yeah.
Because the moment I said yes, I began to have the night sweats that go along with trying to play. Look, I have played a lot of real people. Fred was a very, very public persona. And everybody has an idea of what Fred is, what Fred was like. But the terror that goes along with it is that you want to land in a place that people recognize as his true human behavior, whether you're playing somebody who's real or somebody who's not.
That's Tom Hanks speaking to Gail King from CBS This Morning. Beandrea, what did you think of Tom Hanks' performance?
Well, I thought it was great. And I mean, you always want to hear an actor say what he just said, you know, not, you know, be cocky about the role. And of course, Tom Hanks is beloved just as Mr. Rogers is beloved. So it's, you know, brilliant casting. And I know that I've heard Mariel Heller say that, you know, it took a while to get him on board. But once he did, that's when the movie kind of got legs behind it to actually get made. So both in front of and behind the camera, he had a real impact.
John, what did you think of the performance?
I thought it was really good, and I think in many ways I'm lucky because I've interviewed Tom Hanks a couple of times, and in many ways he's as kind as Fred Rogers is. I think there's a perfect casting of empathy. I think Tom Hanks is an empathetic actor. Fred Rogers obviously was obviously, you know, at a certain point, if you grew up with Fred Rogers like I did, there's a disconnect where you're trying to figure out, like, how do I release all of my judgments of whether or not he looks like him, whether or not he talks like him. But at a certain point, that goes away because I think Tom Hanks is such a good actor. And what he's getting at is kind of the inner life of this man, not the exterior appearance of him. And I thought that's where he was really successful.
Yeah. And John, I don't know if you felt this way about the performance, but in some of the scenes, like there's plenty of the movie that moves very, very slowly. It almost comes to a stop. And there are moments in the movie where just the silence and the look on Fred Rogers' face, as Tom Hanks portrays him, is almost unsettling. It's like I viewed him differently because it felt like he was kind of dissecting the person he was looking at, just kind of in wafer-thin layers until he got down to what was there and what needed exposure. But it was almost kind of, it was uncomfortable to sit with.
It is, but I went back and looked. There's a scene in the movie where Fred Rogers challenges the journalist to be thankful for people who have meant something and loved him into being. And it's actually
a true story. That scene hit me really hard.
But I will say, Google it, because it actually is in a much more public setting. Fred Rogers is accepting an Emmy Lifetime Achievement Award in 1997. And he's in front of this packed audience at this award show. And people think he's kidding when he says, take 10 seconds to think of the people who have helped you become who you are. Watch this video. It is incredibly moving. But also, Fred Rogers is speaking so slowly, you can't believe that it's not at normal speed. And it's something that Tom Hanks emulates. And in that silence, I think you really start listening more closely to the words he's choosing to use.
Ronald, that silence was also, I think, part of the ministerial quality of him, where he just kind of made people sit with what they were dealing with and almost pulled it out, but he made it okay to pull it out.
Yeah, and they talk more about it in the documentary about how he used silence as a perfect interviewer's tool to kind of extract more information, because if I sit here silently, you're more likely to want to fill the silence and mm-hmm. say more about that. If I could talk a little about Tom Hanks as well, though, I can understand it not being an easy role for him, but it was the perfect role for him, especially at this point in his career. We're talking about a Tom Hanks who is beloved by many, has been kind throughout his career, and at this point, he's a little bit older now, and he's playing Fred Rogers, who's also a little bit older now. And it was almost like they just lined up perfectly right at that time for him to play this role.
Julie tweeted, as a child, I dismissed Fred Rogers as corny. Decades later, my adult son and I saw the documentary, and we were both in tears. I wish I'd watched it as a child. I think I would have been a better person now. Well, Julie, the fact that you could feel the documentary, don't be too hard on yourself. I'm sure you're a lovely person now, but I'm interested in part of what you said. What do we take forward from the example of Fred Rogers? We'll get to that in a minute. Stay close.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Bayer. From advances in health to innovations in agriculture, Bayer is advancing science for a better life. Because someone with heart issues should still be able to have their heart jump with joy. Because a farmer using less water should still be able to grow their crops. Because someone getting older should still be able to act young. At Bayer, this is why we science.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to the 1A podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating. That helps other people find the show. And don't forget, you can catch the news roundup at the end of every week.
I listen to Bullseye because Jesse always has really good questions.
What did John Malkovich wear when he was 20?
I don't know how to describe it.
Bullseye, interviews with creators you love and creators you need to know. From MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Biandria, before we keep going on the phone, a little bit more about the team behind this movie. Could you talk a bit about the director and producers of the film and how they might have influenced the roles, the supporting characters?
Sure, yeah. I know. I think Mariel Heller is just a brilliant director. You may remember she had a movie with Melissa McCarthy out last year called Can You Ever Forgive Me? And I think, you know, she comes out of being an actor before she was a director. And I think it really shows because she's able to get, like, this whole cast. I felt like their ensemble was just really strong, like from Chris Cooper, who plays Lloyd Vogel's father, to, of course, Lloyd Vogel, Matthew Reese, and even Susan Kelechi Watson, who plays Vogel's wife. She's also Beth on This Is Us. I thought that there was real attention given to each character, even if they weren't, even though the movie was about Lloyd and Mr. Rogers, there was real attention given to each character's, like, where they were at in their journey, and no character was a throwaway. And I particularly liked seeing that with the wife character, because as we know, that often happens that the wife is kind of just, you know, window dressing in a movie about a man. That's not the case here. And I think also the screenwriters, Micah Fitzerman Blue and Noah Harpster, they had written this script 10 years ago, actually, and they just couldn't get it made. And they credit Mariel Heller with being the force to get it made because she was the person who got Tom Hanks on board. So I think there was a lot of magic going on behind the scenes also, as well as in the movie itself.
John, how is the movie performing right now? Is it doing well at the box office? Is there any awards buzz? What's the reaction been like?
It's doing well. I mean, it's no Frozen 2, but it certainly is doing well enough. I actually bought a ticket and saw it with a real audience, and the theater was full, and it was full of people who were a lot older than me and a lot younger than me. It played to a wide swath of the audience, and definitely I think Tom Hanks is in the conversation for Best Actor. But I also think it's important to look at the place that this movie has in Hollywood. Here are the top seven movies this year. You tell me when you spot the trend. Avengers Endgame, The Lion King, Toy Story 4, Captain Marvel, Spider-Man, Far From Home, Aladdin, Joker. They're all sequels. They're all knockoffs. They're all reboots. The fact that we have an original movie about Mr. Rogers in modern Hollywood is itself as much of a miracle as what Fred Rogers was doing on television.
Let's keep going on the phones. In Annapolis, Maryland, Amy is standing by. Hey, Amy, what's on your mind?
Hi. I was just really excited about how the movie touched on the impact that Fred had on adults. I was a preschool teacher who then went on to be a professor of early childhood education and then ordained as a minister to preschoolers. So Fred has always been this unofficial, not present mentor for me, not present geographically. And one of the things I've learned through studying him is that he really did have this desire to provide programming for adults, but that just really didn't work out for him. So recently I've been showing episodes of Mr. Rogers with groups of parents and talking about what they're learning from watching the episodes, and it's profound the impact that his work for children is having on these adults. There's a lot of crying and just this appreciation for his timing, his slow down pace, and just permission giving to really pay attention to the children in front of them.
Is it profound because they can identify with it? Is it profound because they've never heard it expressed to them in that way? Like, where do you think the impact lies? Where does that come from?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think part of it is that they're revisiting their childhood. And that's one of the things that Fred really encouraged adults to do, is to remember what it was like to be a child, to sort of go back and put yourself back in that child frame of mind. So I think on the one hand, watching those episodes is very nostalgic for them. And so just being in that frame of mind as they then consider what the messages mean for them as parents. For example, the one that I think is most powerful that I've shown is one about not being perfect. And it talks about caring not being a perfect thing, but something that we just endeavor to do. And so these parents watch these different images in this episode of parents caring for children, and they just start weeping. And I think, too, there's just this message that we as parents get that our children have to be on this track, that from the second they're born, we have to get it just right or they're not going to be on the right track. Mm-hmm. And he really provides us with a message of the child in front of you is relevant and important right now, and don't throw them away for the future adult. Celebrate who they are and just slow down.
Yeah. Amy, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. Thanks very much. Ronald, one of the things that kind of to the point that Amy was making in terms of this very caring person, I think that's what moves me the most about the legacy of Fred Rogers is that as a kid, he was one of the first places on television I could remember where I knew I was very deeply cared for. Like that song that would run at the end of the show, "It's such a good feeling to know you're alive." That song will make me cry because it reminds me of that level of kindness that was so profound and so unearned that it's almost overwhelming to think of it now as a grown-up.
And, you know, it's funny because I think critics of Mr. Rogers' message will, you know, talk about a snowflake generation and talk about folks that think that everyone is special. But when you really examine Fred Rogers' message, it was more that you don't have to do anything to earn love. You don't have to do anything to be a to be someone who is loved and who is appreciated. And I think that's the message that we really need to glean from what he was saying.
Stacy posted on our Facebook page, "I feel like such a Scrooge. I did not like the movie one bit, and I'm a movie crier." Okay, fair enough, Stacy, fair enough. But Beyondre, what about that? Is this one of those movies that's really designed to be a tearjerker, and if you're not that kind of person, this ain't for you?
No, I think this movie is actually designed for the Lloyds of the world. I mean, Lloyds is the cynical, you know, New Yorker, quintessential journalist, you know, objectivity, hard news. And, you know, we see him gradually in a very kind of true way, you know, the onion peeled back on who he really is and what he's really dealing with. And I think in my screening, I saw the movie twice. And I think the last time I saw it was with more of a real audience. And, you know, there's, you can just kind of hear people silently weeping, but trying not to show it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's therapeutic, you know? We need spaces like that.
The documentary, by the way, if you have not seen the documentary, bring Kleenex.
You finna cry.
You finna sure. cry. You think you ain't gonna cry? It ain't gonna go like you think. It's just be ready. Just take it from me. So as we wind down, what do we take from the movie going forward? I feel like what I took from the movie is a reaffirmation of something I believe, and I'm going to say this. I know it's going to be controversial. I don't care. I don't think cynics should be journalists. I think if you're going to impute your pain, your anger, your hurt, your shame, your disconnection on other people, then you are not trustworthy to tell their stories. You need to deal with your cynicism and separate it from your journalism. And that, for me, was the conflict with Lloyd. I think cynicism and journalism are anathema from one another. At me on Twitter if you want to, but that's what I think. And it just kind of reaffirmed for me the importance of skepticism, but not cynicism. That's what I take away from the film, and in addition to a number of other things. Ronald, what did you take away from the film primarily?
The part that resonated the most with me is being able to deal with anger. As someone who that you know has dealt with a lot of repressed anger over the course of my life, thinking about it now and thinking that, one, I can express it in a way that's healthy, I can deal with it, I can put it down, I don't have to hold on to it, and my feelings are okay.
Beyondre, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I, you know, as a kind of hippy dippy person who also believes in science and intellectualism, I was just really happy to see a movie that was essentially about emotional intelligence. And we just never, I can't think of a movie, maybe you all can, where you get to see that, especially one that has an actor in it called Tom Hanks. So I think, you know, the Oprah Super Soul Sunday podcast, I'm in therapy crowd, like Hollywood needs to make more movies for us.
And elaborate briefly, Beyondre, on what you mean by emotional intelligence.
Well, emotional intelligence is based on this idea that there are multiple intelligences beyond the intellect. I believe it was Daniel Goleman who pioneered that concept, but fact check me on that.
No, John, that's right. That's right.
Oh, okay, great.
Fact check complete. There you go. John, what do you take from the movie primarily?
Wow. I mean, I keep thinking the more we talk about this movie, about Morgan Neville's documentary, I mean, I think the heart of Fred Rogers' ministry, and I do use that word intentionally, is this idea of reconciliation, of finding bridges and finding bridges between people you're separated from. It could be between you and some spiritual figure. But we mentioned earlier the Officer Clemens appearance, and that's in the documentary. Officer Clemens was a black police officer on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood who came on the show in 1969 at a time when swimming pools were segregated and Fred Rogers put his feet in a splash pool with Officer Clemens. What Fred Rogers was doing many years ago is something we need to remember now. That, to me, is the takeaway from this film. Let's reconcile ourselves with people that we're separated from and try to tear down walls and bridges and build bridges over those walls.
John Horn is the host of The Frame and the vice president of the 1A Movie Club. John, thanks very much for spending the hour with us.
It has been a pleasure. I'm going to miss you.
Beandria July is a freelance culture writer and film critic. Thanks, Beandria.
Thanks so much, Joshua. Good luck to you in your next steps.
And Ronald Young Jr., an associate minister and junior pastor at Greater Refuge Temple here in Washington, and host of the podcast Time Well Spent and Leaving the Theater. Ronald, thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
This conversation was produced by Morgan Givens and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.